So let's thank PJ and the band. You know, that song really is a good lead-in to what we're talking about today, this whole idea of hope and anticipation at Christmas. And this is something, you know, really anticipation at its core is hope. And during this series, we're looking at some of the values or the virtues that we find kind of underneath the surface in the Christmas story and how these virtues are actually things we can live out all year round. You know, we so many times think about these things only being confined to the Christmas season, but they're not. They're things that you and I can gain from as we tap into them throughout the entire year. So hey, I'm Kurt. It's great to be with you today. And if you're a guest with us this morning, man, it's great to have you here with us. If you're here for baby child dedications, man, awesome to have you with us here at Crosspoint today. If you're in from out of town, whatever may have brought you into this place. And we're talking about hope. We're talking about anticipation. And the cool thing about Christmas is, you know, regardless of where you are in the spiritual spectrum, you know, regardless of what your spiritual background is, you know, Christmas really calls into question some core values that we all wrestle with at one point or another. Things like, you know, can I really trust in the goodness of God? I mean, can I really trust the promises that God gives to us? I mean, you know, we wrestle with that question. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, kind of skeptical of Jesus, if you're on the verge of following Jesus, or if you've been following Jesus for years. There's moments where you say, man, can I really put the weight of my life into this? You know, this another question is hope a real thing? I mean, are there tangible ways that I can actually be encouraged by what took place in this Christmas event that actually impacts my life, not only today, but throughout the year? And so we're going to kind of go about answering some of those questions today. And before we do that, let me pray for us. God, thank you that we can gather in this room, in this dark room on this Sunday morning. And God, I just pray that as we dive into this story today, that you would be our teacher. Many of us have heard the story of Christmas before, your story of Christmas. Many of us have read it hundreds of times. Others of us may be engaging with it at the level we're going to do so today for the very first time. And God, I just pray that for all of us, there would be a newness with this story today. And as we look at this event where Jesus breaks into the world in the form of a baby at Christmas time, God, I just pray that you might do something profound in us. The hope that brought to the world then, God, that there may be some hope brought to us right where we're at today. And so I just pray these things in your name, Jesus, your power, your identity. Amen. You know, for me, as I think about the gravity of those questions, you know, is God really good? Can I trust the promises of God? Can I have anticipation? Can I have hope? You know, I kind of like to go to school on spiritual giants. In fact, I have some spiritual giants in my life that have kind of lived out these principles that I look to. And when I think of people, you know, that have done that in epic proportions, you know, I have like a person that I always turn to, especially at Christmas time, that has just been a model of perpetual hope and anticipation. And he's actually the lead character in one of the best Christmas movies ever. All right, 26 years ago, this Christmas movie hit the scene, and I just think we need to experience a little bit of this perpetual hope this morning. You up for it? All right, yeah, so here we go. Here's the holiday classic, Christmas Vacation, and the perpetual anticipation and hope. Take a look.
There it is. Griswold family Christmas tree.
Isn't it a little big?
It's not big, it's just full.
Dad, that thing wouldn't fit in our yard.
Not going in our yard, Russ. It's going in our living room.
Clark, do you think there's enough room for the angel?
Oh, sure, honey. I have a little more trimming to do, but that won't be a problem. Ready? I give you the Griswold family Christmas tree. A lot of sap in here. It looks great. A little full. A lot of sap.
Did I tell you I talked to my mother today?
And?
They've decided they're coming for Christmas, too. You know, it's not too late to change our plans.
No, that's great. It's great.
I think you're forgetting how difficult it's going to be having everybody in the house at the same time.
Honey, they're family. They're not strangers off the street.
All they do is argue.
Christmas is about resolving differences and seeing through the petty problems of family life.
Yeah. And it's about my mother accusing your mother of buying cheap hot dogs and your mother accusing my mother of waxing her upper lip and then they don't speak to
each other. Your mother waxes her upper lip?
She has for years.
Doesn't show.
I don't know, Sparky. I just have this...
Ellen, I want to have Christmas here in our house. It means a lot to me. All my life I've wanted to have a big family Christmas.
Mm-hmm. It's just that I know how you build things up in your mind, Sparky. You set standards that no family event can ever live up to.
What have I ever done that?
Parties, weddings,
night,
anniversaries,
honey.
Funerals, holidays, vacations.
Oh, man, Clark is my holiday hero. I mean, I don't know that there's anybody that has more hope that things are going to be good, that things are eventually going to turn out the way that I want them, other than Clark. I mean, whether it's for the good old family Christmas or, you know, just the anticipation of what the Christmas season is. And I think many of us, Christmas has a way of bringing that out in us, regardless of where we are in the spiritual spectrum. And, you know, whether it's the good old family, you know, Christmas that we're longing for, or it's the hope of the perfect gift, or that moment as a child that we had, where we just long for, you know, Christmas to be a certain way. I know for me, I always think back to like 1980-something, 80, 81. There's a group, a toy group named Gabriel that put out an awesome toy that I had to have that year. It was called an Erector Set. Anybody remember the Erector Set? Any boys, men? Yes. You know, it was like the Erector Set was like graduating from Lincoln Logs and Tinker Toys, right? It's like now I'm working with steel and bolts. And look at that. I mean, it's like 100 toys in one. I mean, I'm like, who wouldn't want that? So, I mean, I had to have this toy in the worst way. And if you ever had that kind of experience as a kid where you just so longed to have like that perfect gift, you know that the Christmas list business is serious business, right? I mean, that's like really a big deal. And so, I mean, I pretty much ran my own firm at Christmas. It was called the How Do I Get Everything on My List firm. That's what I ran. And it was actually a science to it. I mean, I had to do a little R&D, as you would do with any business. I'd do a little research and development, which for me started with Jeffrey's toy book. Anybody remember that book? Come in the mail every year from Toys R Us. And you know, I would look at that and I'd kind of get a lay of the land. All right, you kind of figure out, okay, what's going on in the Christmas toy book? What toys are the hit toys this year? The Erector Set that year was it for me. And then I had to do a little economic calculations with my family. You know, I'd kind of figure, okay, has it been a good year for the family? Do we go on any vacations? You know, how have birthdays gone this year? And you know, for me, and listen, that still happens today, by the way. In fact, just this week, our 9-year-old came to Julie and I, and she was brought us two lists. She brought a list for us for Christmas and then a list for Santa. And then went on to explain how what was on each list. And I said, well, why two lists? And she said, well, you know, the one for you is things I think you can handle. And then, wink, you know, the one for Santa, you know, has the more expensive items that I want to make sure I get. And so, you know, she's already like working this out. She's like, this is like where Econ 101 begins, right? It's when you're 9 and you're trying to figure out how do I get everything I want for Christmas. And so after that, you kind of move into the marketing phase, right? You got to figure out, you know, am I going to go kind of the nostalgic, you know, route, the cute factor where I, you know, write the letter to Santa and, you know, make sure mom and dad see it so they can know everything that I want? Or, you know, do I just kind of cut the middleman out and go right to the source, you know? Where it's kind of like, hey, you know, I remember at some point saying to my mom and dad, look, I know how this works. You know, how about you just get me what's on my list? You know, if Santa comes through, great. But, you know, God gave me you as parents. I mean, of all the people he could have chose, he gave me you. Now, he could have given me another set that wouldn't get me the Erector set this Christmas, but no, he gave me you. And so, you know, you kind of work that a little bit, and then the rest of the season from that point forward, and some of you know where I'm going with on this, the rest of the season is just public relations management, right? I mean, I'm trying to, like, stay off the naughty list. So I tell you what, December was the best behaved, you know, month of the year in our home because, you know, we're trying to work with how can we get to that point of having the gift that we so desire, right? And I just think there's something about Christmas, you know, even some of those childhood memories for all of us that creates such an anticipation. And honestly, I think it's why we laugh at movies like this, right? I mean, because we've been there. We've lived that. We've had that hope for the perfect Christmas, for the perfect tree. Things don't ever go the way that we plan for them to go. And I just think that, you know, the Christmas story is all about anticipation. It's all about the hope of what's yet to come. And this morning, in fact, I think we're hardwired for this. I think God has hardwired into us, you know, this desire for there to be more. I think it's critical to following and understanding who Jesus really is. And so, you know, Christmas is all about anticipation. It's all about hope. And this morning, I want us to take a look at this community of hope that we see in the Old Testament portion of the Bible. It's known as the nation of Israel because they're the community that the Christmas, original Christmas story was really for. See, they had been in waiting, they had been in longing, they had been, you know, kind of expecting for God to fulfill these hopes and dreams and these promises, these hundreds of promises he had made to them for hundreds of years, and they're lying in a waiting stage, waiting for this to come about. So I kind of want to walk you real quickly through this Old Testament story this morning and kind of the journey of this community of hope, and it kind of helps us understand why Christmas is such a big deal. I mean, we know it's a big deal, but why every time we get to this time of year, there's such an anticipation for it. And so this story really begins with the first chapter in the Bible, back in Genesis chapter 1. And this is where God created the world. This is where God, you know, kind of put everything in motion, and the world is exactly the way he created it to be. Right? There's a harmony in the world. There's a harmony between God and man. There's a harmony between God and nature. God creates woman. There's a harmony between God and woman. There's a beauty in the world at that time. There's a creativity that man and woman are experiencing. There's a sense of, you know, they have the opportunity to impact the world, to take the garden and steer it places, to develop it into something more. And there's a delight in the garden. There's just a pure sense of joy and even a pleasure that God is hardwired into their experience. And he's saying, this is exactly how I created life to be. But then the story takes a tragic turn. And we see the man and the woman, just a few verses later, they decide something. They basically get this idea, I wonder if God's holding out on me. I wonder if God's really going to fulfill his promises. And so they actually choose against God. And this is where sin and pain and brokenness are all brought into the human experience. It's called the fall. And when that happens, God, because of the way his economy and the world is set up, he has to tell them, look, you've broke the covenant that I've established with you. And because that's been broken, there's certain consequences that are now going to follow. But even in the midst of him communicating this to them, that they've broke the covenant, he actually, even in that conversation, he sows some seeds of hope. He kind of foreshadows the sense of there's going to be a redemption. Things are going to be made right one day. And this is kind of the beginning of the Christmas story that we ultimately see culminating in the first century. And so in Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, this is the point of the tragic fall. It says this. This is God talking to Satan. He says, I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your offspring and hers. He will crush your head, and you will strike his heel. And so that last phrase right there, he will crush your head, is actually a foreshadowing that Jesus eventually will come. He's saying, basically, Satan, you're not going to have the last word. All right, the last word in my creating will not be by you separating me from my created beings. And he says there's going to be a redeemer, there's going to be a rescuer, there's going to be one who comes to make everything right again. He says he will crush you, he will crush your dominion, he will crush your kingdom. He says, and there's going to be a bruising, you will bruise him, you will bruise his heel. And he's kind of foreshadowing what's going to take place on the cross, but ultimately he will crush you. Then we fast forward a couple hundred years, and we see God forming the nation of Israel. And he's doing this. This is kind of where his offspring will come from. And he does this by interacting with a guy by the name of Abraham. And nobody knows Abraham at the time. Abraham's just an ordinary guy living in the Middle East. He doesn't really have any reputation of any sort that would cause him to be picked out or chosen by God, but that's who God chooses. And he goes to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, and here's what he says to him. He says, I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And listen to this right here. He says, all peoples on earth will be blessed by you. All peoples on earth will be blessed by you and through you. And so God, in essence, goes to this guy, Abraham, who is childless, by the way, and he says, and his wife is well past her childbearing years, and he says, hey, guess what? You're going to have a son. And not only are you going to start a family right now, but I'm actually going to birth a nation through you. And this son is not just going to be a blessing to you and your immediate family, but he's actually going to be a blessing to the entire world. So again, we see Jesus foreshadowed in this statement to Abraham that comes from God, that as a part of Abraham's lineage, eventually is going to come a redeemer that's going to be a blessing to all the people. Now, what's fascinating about this is this all takes place, and then God kind of goes silent for 400 years. For 400 years, the Israelites enter into this season of silence. It's called the 400 years of silence, 400 years of darkness, where they literally enter into this period. See, there's been these prophets that God had continued to give them that would bring words of encouragement, or here's what God wants to say to you. They're kind of like the spokespersons for God. And all of a sudden, there's no prophets anymore. There's no voice coming from God encouraging them. In fact, it's like God was seemingly absent. And we also know during this period of time that the Israelites were enslaved to a variety of different nations. They're enslaved to Persia, and then Persia, you know, Alexander the Great comes on the scene and conquers Persia, and now they're enslaved to the Greeks, and then eventually right before Christmas time, we see the Israelites enslaved to probably one of the greatest powerful military regimes that the world had ever known up to that point, the Empire of Rome. And so, I mean, they're in this perpetual darkness, this perpetual bondage, this perpetual night, and in the midst of this darkness, in the midst of this darkness, all of a sudden, light breaks through. And so when it seems that all the promises have gone by the wayside and it couldn't get any worse than it is, all of a sudden, in this single event in human history, what we know as Christmas, everything changes. And God actually pronounces it with angels. Take a look at Luke chapter 2. This is kind of the original Christmas story as we know it. And this is where the angels interact with the shepherds. God says, the angels say, do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy. Notice the word right here, for all the people. All right, so this had been communicated hundreds of years ago. This is going to be for all the people. Today, in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord. Now, I always have to laugh when I read this because, you know, one of the things that always cracks me up every time we read this story at Christmas is that, you know, what angels do when people show up. Have you ever noticed what's the first line that's always said when the angel shows up? Don't be afraid. Whoa, don't be scared. Why do they say that? I mean, because what are angels, right? I mean, when we think of angels, we think of this right here, right? Like, that looks like a Gerber baby with a wig on. I mean, well, who's going to be afraid of that thing right there? This is actually Raphael's image of angels, one of the more popular images from the Sistine Madonna. This is where popular culture, you know, kind of does the Christmas story a little bit of an injustice, because angels are always kind of underdeveloped in our creative arts today. In fact, you know, we even had that TV show a few years ago. What was it called? Touched by an Angel. Remember that one? Anybody ever scared watching Touched by the Angel? No. It's like a family feel-good show, right? I mean, you might be like, man, that Della Reese, she really intimidates me. But I mean, for the most part, you're like, oh, angels are warm, cuddly. I mean, there's even songs about them, and they're singing. You know, angels are always singing. You know, there's nowhere in the Bible that talks about angels singing. Nowhere. You know what angels are doing? They're not singing. They're fighting. These are cosmic warriors. You know what happens when angels show up? People have to change their drawers. That's what has to happen, all right? That's why the angel's always like, hey, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Because these are like cosmic warriors showing up to communicate something. And in this instance right here, they're saying, hey, don't be afraid. Something big has taken place. Something big has just happened. And these promises that God has made to you over the last hundreds of years, they're about to come true. You know, this seed of hope that where we got this glimpse that Satan's head was going to be crushed, it's about to take place. This lineage through Abraham that God foreshadowed a number of centuries ago, it's just about to be fulfilled. And you can actually go see him in Bethlehem. So this is why the Christmas story, this season, regardless of where we are in the spiritual spectrum, This is why there's such an anticipation that comes during this season. And so what does that mean for us today? Well, three quick hitters, three quick things this morning that we can look back at this story and say, you know, that still fuels hope for us today. And not just for this season, but it's something we can take with us all year round. So number one, here's the first thing it does for us. We see that God gets his hands dirty. See, in this Christmas story, we see that God actually gets down and gets his hands dirty. Now, there's a prophet back right before the time of Jesus by the name of Isaiah. And this prophet was somebody who was a spokesperson for God. And some of the attributes he specifically shares give us a very clear picture of who Jesus was going to be. In fact, in Isaiah 7, Isaiah talks about one of the names Jesus would have. And here's what he says. He says, "Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign, and the virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and will call him," what's that word right there? Emmanuel. We don't use Emmanuel very much, but Emmanuel means God with us. And see, Isaiah is speaking this. He's saying, hey, God is going to be with you. And he's saying this to the Israelite nation in a time when they didn't know when or if God was ever going to show up again. In fact, there's something we kind of miss when we read this, because our culture doesn't necessarily understand, you know, the gods the way the Middle Eastern culture this was birthed into understood God. See, though it's really the same. See, religion, it doesn't matter what brand it is, all has this idea that the gods are somehow way up here and the people are way down here, and somehow we've ticked the gods off, so the gods are angry, and we've just got to do whatever we can to continue to try to make the gods happy, to please the gods, to appease them, to make amends. And so, you know, the people of that day, similar to people of our day, have no idea about a God who actually comes, that's not just up here, but actually gets down on our level and gets his hands dirty. Who hundreds of years before he even shows up in the form of a baby, the prophet says, "I will be with you. I will be Emmanuel. I'm coming in at your level." Now, this was no surprise to the Israelite nation, because they had been involved with God on this level for hundreds of years. But they still were wondering if God was yet going to fulfill his promise again. I mean, go all the way back to the creation story. If you look back at creation, how does God create things? He speaks, right? He says, "Let there be light." And what happens? Boom, a sun hits the sky. He says, "Let there be night." What happens? Stars and a moon hit the sky. So he speaks things into existence. But notice when it comes to creating man, what does he do? He diverts from just speaking words, and it says that he actually breathed. He actually breathed the breath into the nostrils of man. All right, now, I don't know if you've ever breathed into anybody's nostrils lately. Anybody? I wouldn't recommend it. Apparently, I did this a few nights ago with my wife. She rolled over, you know, face the other way. I guess she didn't enjoy the experience nonetheless. I don't know that I would either, right? And so, but think about this. There's a level of intimacy that comes when you have a God who gets down, and it says he took the dirt and the dust, and he formed man with his hands out of the dust of the earth. And so it's a God who gets his hands dirty and breathes pneuma, spirit, life into his creation. Emmanuel is the only one that would do this. That's why he's defined as God with us. And guess what? Here's the cool thing. God still gets his hands dirty today. I mean, if you're here this morning and you're thinking, man, will God really get engaged within my life? I mean, would he even notice me? Would he even want anything to do with me? Yeah, God says, "I'll get dirty. I'll get down on your level." And you, if you want God to reveal yourself to him, just authentically seek him. Say, "God, I want to experience you." And God will fulfill that promise. You know, back to my Erector set when I was 8. I remember that Christmas morning. And my dad that morning, he really fulfilled this character trait of God that Christmas morning. All right, I remember coming down, sitting around the tree with my brothers. You know, we'd kind of pass gifts out, and then it'd be kind of like holy chaos for the next, you know, 20 minutes. And I just remember sitting there waiting for that big gift. I mean, there's a really big gift under the tree. I couldn't wait to get to that one big gift. And I kept getting the little gifts, right? I kept getting the little bags, you know, you just rip the paper out of the top. And all of a sudden, I get to this big gift, and the anticipation I have, is this going to be that thing that I've asked for? And what ensued next was a rest of the day experience as we opened that up and my dad and I tried to erect this crane set for the next 14 hours. It was awesome. I mean, I tell you what, my dad, I tell you, you know, there were nuts and bolts and steel all over the floor. And I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. I just want to play with it. And I tell you what, my dad, he got down and got dirty with me that Christmas. He got his hands dirty and engaged at my level, you know, in what seemed like endless hours. I'll never forget it. In fact, some of my favorite Christmas gifts Julie and I've got for our kids are the ones that, you know, take like multiple days of assembling and multiple days of hiding, right? You know, because I love getting my hands dirty for my kids. And this is how God is with us. Isaiah says a couple other things about Jesus. A couple chapters later in Isaiah 9, he says this. He says, the people are walking in darkness because they've been in this 400 years of darkness. But they have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a new light has dawned. Let me stop here for a moment. Have you ever noticed that the Christmas story is a night story? Have you ever noticed that, you know, when Jesus was born, it was nighttime? Have you noticed that, you know, when the angels came to speak to, to the shepherds, it was night? Why is that? I think it's symbolic of the fact that the Israelites, the world, had been living in a perpetual darkness. They'd been living in a perpetual night. And in the midst of this darkness, this light breaks through in the form of a child. And Isaiah says this. He says, for unto us a child is born. To us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called. And then we get all the names that Isaiah gives to or foretells of what Jesus is going to be. He says, he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. And so that word zeal right there actually means fiery passionate. What he's saying here is God is fiery passionate about fulfilling his promises, which leads to the second way that we can lean into hope this Christmas, and that is that God makes good on his promises. For us, Christmas is a picture of how God makes good on his promises. As I think about my hero, you know, Clark Griswold, I mean, I tell you what, every Christmas season, one of my favorite moments is the first time that movie comes out. And I love how, in spite of everything he's been through, he has this desire to make good on his promise to his kids, this gift that he so longs to give to his kids because he wants to give a good gift to them. So I want you to take another look. You want another look at the store? All right, let's take another look at the store.
What is it? A letter confirming your reservation at the Nut House?
It's from my company.
Your bonus.
My bonus.
Open it, Clark. Open it.
Yeah, I hope it's a fortune, Clark.
That you do, Eddie. I was afraid.
Are you going to bawl all over it, or are you going to open it?
I was going to wait till tomorrow to tell you all this, but what the heck? With this bonus check, I'm putting in a swimming pool.
That's it. That's the big one.
Open it.
I'm sorry if I've been a little short with everyone lately. I've been waiting for this bonus. To make sure the pool goes in as soon as the ground thaws, I had to lay out the money in advance. And until this little miracle arrived, I didn't have enough in my account to cover the check I wrote.
Yeah, this is Groveton, Dad.
Yeah.
Drum roll.
There's enough left over. I'm going to fly you all down here to help us dedicate it.
I can't swim, Clark.
I know that, Eddie. Hey.
Oh.
Hey.
Oh. Hey. Clark, what's wrong?
Honey.
It's bigger than you expected?
Smaller? What is it?
It's a one-year membership in the Jelly of the Month Club.
Oh, God.
Clark, that's the gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
That it is, Edward. That it is indeed.
Oh, man. You know, talk about a guy that just has a perpetual hope, perpetual anticipation, even amidst the difficult things. I mean, the dude's cussing. The dude's like ready to knock off his great Uncle Bill or whatever his name is because, you know, and yet even amidst all these things, he's longing amidst that to bring a perfect gift for his kid. And that's what God wants to do for us. In fact, God actually gives us names. He says there are ways that we can tap into the gift from God. And he gives us names in Isaiah chapter 9. In fact, take a look at these. It says he'll be called Wonderful Counselor. He's going to be a wise counselor. It says he'll be a mighty God, a God who fights for us, a God who will protect us. He'll be an everlasting Father. See, through Jesus, we actually have the opportunity to become children of God. And then the final word that he gives, the final title right here, is he says he will be the Prince of Peace. Now, you know, some of us are going to get Christmas cards. Maybe you're already getting Christmas cards this season. And over these next few weeks, you might have one arrive that has the word peace on it. Now, I'm not going to have any of those arrive because I dogged on Christmas cards a few years ago and y'all took me off your list. But nonetheless, some of you might get a Christmas card that says peace. And you know, I don't know that we fully understand the depth of this word. I mean, we see all the, you know, all the terrorist activity and the hatred in our world. We say, man, our world needs peace. But to a person from the nation of Israel, the word wasn't just peace, it was the word shalom. And the word shalom is way more than just an absence of conflict. It's way more than just, you know, not being at war as a nation. And so when they used that word shalom, what they were really saying is, may God bring complete wholeness and harmony to your life. May you experience a harmony between you and God. May you experience a harmony in your relationships with others. May you experience a harmony with your spouse, with your friends. Get this, may God restore the Garden of Eden in your life. May it be in your life exactly the way God designed it to be. In fact, he goes on to say, of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. And I don't know if you've noticed, but we're not there yet. I mean, every time you turn on the TV, you see, you know, we're not there yet. Every time another relationship around us, you know, breaks down, we realize, man, we're not there yet. Every time we deal with health difficulties or challenges in life, we say, man, we're not there yet. But what the prophet Isaiah is saying is this is where history is going. There was one who came who's taking us in this direction. Even though at times we feel like we're in a perpetual darkness. I don't know if you've ever had that moment, that encounter where you say, man, I wish it could always be this way. Anybody ever said that? Maybe under your breath or out loud, you know, why can't family gatherings always be this way? You know, why can't shopping always be this fun? You know, why can't they play Christmas music, you know, on every station all year round? Maybe they're not going to say that. I mean, that wouldn't be shalom for anybody, right? But I mean, whenever we say that, that's shalom right there. That's our desire for shalom, you know, for us to want things to be this way, the way they're supposed to be. Which leads us to our third big idea, third big walkout, is we have to press into hope. If we want to have hope, we actually have to lean into it. Now, let me give you a couple ways to do that this Christmas season, because you might be saying, well, how do we do that? Well, on the back of your connection card are some walkouts. There's some next steps on here. And one of the ways that we can press into hope is to engage with the story. So I want to encourage you to engage with the Christmas story this week. I want to encourage you to make one of your next steps this week to read Luke chapter 1 and Luke chapter 2. This is kind of the overall story of the Christmas story. And maybe you want to mark that and make that your next step this morning. And as you read that this week, you know, take 20, 25 minutes to read the Christmas story. You can, if you don't have a Bible, you can open the CrossPoint app, hit the Bible button, and it'll take you right to Luke chapter 1. And you can even listen to it if you want to. You can get an audio version. But as you do this, my hope is that you would identify with somebody in the story. Maybe it'll be Mary. Maybe as you're approaching Christmas, you're really trying to figure out if Jesus is legit or not. I mean, that was Mary's story. She's trying to figure out if she even wanted to receive this promise that God had made to her. So maybe you'll connect with Mary. Maybe as you read the story, you'll connect with the shepherds. You know, the shepherds really were the disenfranchised culture of that time. I mean, they're kind of like the low of the low. They were the grunts. They were the outcasts. And yet the very first people that God goes to announce the arrival of the Savior is to this group. And they stepped away and they're like, oh my word, maybe this Jesus is for all people. And so you can press into hope this week by reading the story and identifying with the story. Another way you can press into hope is in Isaiah 9. You know, there's four words that the prophet Isaiah gives us right here that are available to us even yet today. Maybe you're sitting here thinking, you know, this Christmas season, as we've just began, I'm dealing with some difficult decisions and I just need some counsel. Well, Jesus says, the prophet Isaiah says, Jesus will be a wonderful counselor. That's available for you today. Maybe you need to write that in. You just need to say, hey, I want to receive counsel from Jesus this week. Hey, it's available to you right now. Maybe you look and you say, you know, I just need a God to fight for me. I'm dealing with some difficult health challenges. I'm dealing with, you know, some difficulty in my marriage or in a relationship with a significant other or one of my children. And I just need a God who will fight for us. God says, I will be that to you. I will be that to you. You know, maybe as you approach Christmas this season, you know, you're in a little different place than you have been in the past. And you've always kind of viewed God as this distant God way up here, you know, where you're way down here and somehow you've ticked God off and you're saying, you know, I want to know the intimacy this Christmas of a God who comes and dwells among us and gets his hands dirty. You know, it's available to you. He says he's going to be a wonderful father. Maybe you just need more shalom. Yeah, maybe you need more wholeness in whatever area of life. Just write that in here. Write that in here. Declare it. Say, I want to receive shalom from Jesus this week. Because Jesus is a Jesus who fulfills his promises. And this is who they said he came to be. Let me pray for us. God, there's something about Christmas that just brings out a great anticipation. And God, thank you for this picture of a father who gets engaged with his children. For a father who gets his hands dirty on our behalf. And God, I just pray that right now, in this moment, you would do something profound in us. If we're longing for any of these character traits that you promised that you would be, God, they're available to us right now. May we seek them and pursue them and experience them. And if we're in a darkness right now, God, if there's any dark season that we're walking through, God, I just pray that as much as took place that first Christmas, that in the stillness and the quietness and the darkness of that night, God, as you lowered yourself down and broke the darkness in the world at that time, God, would you just lower yourself down and break the darkness in our lives right now?